This is FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for the Butte Report. Welcome to the Butte Report. It is Thursday, January 28th, 2021. The Butte Report is a weekly program reporting on and analyzing issues that affect our lives and our livelihood by focusing on local government, including the Board of Supervisors, the various municipalities, and even school districts and water districts within Butte County. I'm your host, Sue Hildebrand. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Duffy's Tavern, on the corner of 4th and Main in Chico for over 30 years. Duffy's is now open for pickup and delivery service from 5 until 9 p.m. on Friday and Saturday nights. Go to duffystogo.com or call 530-343-7718 to pre-order. Follow Duffy's on Instagram and Facebook for updates. Stay safe, and here's to another 30 years. Tonight we'll cover the Butte County Board of Supervisors, the Chico Bidwell Parks and Playground Commission, and updates from around the county. Interviews include Andy Pickett, Butte County Chief Administrative Officer, and Tom Barrett of the Friends of Bidwell Park. The Butte County Board of Supervisors met this week. Public Health Director Danette York gave an update on the county's vaccine distribution effort. She reported that the county, along with other non-county distribution sites, is currently vaccinating all tiers in Phase 1, which includes people most at risk, such as people in congregate living facilities, healthcare workers such as EMTs, in-home support service workers, dental and oral care workers. People 75 years and older not living in congregate facilities have been invited to get vaccinated. And once that age group nears completion, residents 65 to 74 will be eligible to receive the vaccine. Public Health requests that people do not contact the health department, but instead register on the county website, and the public health department will notify people as they become eligible to receive the vaccine. That website is buttecounty.net/public health. Director York also reported that the county can administer 5,000 to 6,000 shots per week. An estimated 16,000 shots have already been administered. A vaccine status board has been added to the public health website, and again, that website, buttecounty.net/public health. In terms of the new strain of COVID-19, known as the UK variant, County Public Health Officer Dr. Robert Bernstein emailed information from the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention, stating that by March, it is expected to be the dominant strain in the U.S. and possibly even earlier in California. This strain spreads 50% more rapidly than the current strain among adults and children. The United Kingdom's new Emergency Respiratory Virus Threats Advisory Group reported to the World Health Organization Strategic Advisory Group of Experts that preliminary evidence suggests that the new variant may also be substantially more deadly, but that more evidence is needed. Bottom line, according to this information, while waiting for the vaccine, adhere to the non-pharmaceutical methods of prevention, including wearing masks, stay 6 feet apart, avoid crowds and poorly ventilated places, and wash your hands. Continuing with the Board of Supervisors, the board received updates about the process of redistricting and approved a resolution to receive $153 million in a federal community development block grant, also known as CDBG. I spoke with Butte County Chief Administrative Officer Andy Pickett about both the redistricting effort and the CDBG funding, and started by asking him to explain what the $153 million can be used for.
Yeah, that $153 million is divided up into the different jurisdictions within the county. For Butte County's allocation is $61 million, and the other towns and cities get the other $91 million. Now, these funds are used to help finance affordable housing developments, things like apartment complexes. The goal of these funds is to leverage as many housing units as possible, specifically for low and moderate income households.
the money will be distributed through, as you mentioned, it'll be distributed to the various municipalities. $33 million will go to Chico, $55 million will go to Paradise, $9 million to Oroville, $2.3 million to the city of Gridley. Andy Pickett, does the county have any sense about how many affordable housing units the $153 million in total could fund?
You know, we don't have a number, and that that's because we don't have projects yet. So what we'll be doing is solicitation for developers to submit their projects, and then we'll rank them, and then based on what they submit, that'll determine how many housing units will be coming forward.
Andy Pickett, do you have an estimate of the number of affordable housing units that are needed right now and estimated as we move into the future here in Butte County?
You know, I don't have the number needed, but I can tell you this, that through the last couple of fires, the Camp Fire and the North Complex Fire, we've lost 16% of the housing stock. So it's not an insignificant number that we need.
Let's turn to redistricting. Every 10 years, the federal government conducts the census to count people and where these people live. And then all across the country, redistricting occurs. The political boundary lines are redrawn to ensure that there is generally the same number of people in each district. And in Butte County, because of the Camp Fire, many people have relocated within the city. Tens of thousands have moved to Chico, and many more have moved outside of the county. Andy Pickett, talk about the complexities of creating a new district map with the loss of so many people and the movement of so many people within the county. And then if you would, talk about the process that the county may use to create these new district maps.
Sure. There are a couple of different things that are complex this year. You mentioned one of them, the dispersion of individuals from rich communities. These individuals, there's thousands and thousands of these individuals who have moved within the county, some outside, but we're more interested in the residents who remained inside of the county. We have to create maps that are equal between the supervisory districts. So the way that the populations have shifted makes it more complex than the usual redistricting, which typically is moving a line here or there, not a whole lot of shifting. This year it's going to be, by necessity, more pronounced. The other factor that is new and therefore a little bit complicating is the passage of the Fair Maps Act, AB 849, last year. This added several requirements to the redistricting process. For example, there's certain outreach that has to happen. There has to be a website maintained with draft maps. There has to be a minimum of 4 public hearings, and there's other technical requirements on the maps themselves. So between the dispersion of the individuals from the rich communities and the Fair Maps Act, it is a very complicated environment that we'll be working with. As for the options available, there really are 4 different ways that the board can approach this redistricting. First is the traditional way. And this is where the board, with the help of a demographer and following the Fair Maps Act requirements, they develop their own maps, and then they approve their own maps. That's the process that has been used up to now, every redistricting process. We have also the availability of using an advisory redistricting commission. This is a commission that would be appointed by the board, and the purpose would be to give advice, to conduct the public hearings, to solicit input, and then present that information to the board. And then with that information, the board then develops their own maps and approves the map. Another option is an independent redistricting commission. Now, this is a commission that the board would hand the entire process over to this commission. This commission would do all of the hearings, all of the inputs, and then they develop and approve maps. And that's a very complex process because the board would have to adopt an ordinance laying out how the appointment process goes to this independent commission, and there are extensive set of rules on the Fair Maps Act as to who can be on the commission. And then the last option is somewhat of a hybrid. This is the same structure as an independent commission with the same requirements, but instead of producing a single map, the hybrid commission would produce 2 or more maps, and then the board would select which of those maps that is provided by the commission. It would be restricted to those maps.
This is a very complicated process, and throw into all of the mix this pandemic. So talk with us about the time frame that you're looking at. And I did catch that there is a requirement of 4 public meetings to talk about the new proposed district boundaries. So talk about the time frame for us.
Sure, yeah. And you mentioned the pandemic, which plays into this as well. Typically, we would receive the data from the census on March 31st or by March 31st, and then we would adopt a map by August 15th. That's a typical timeline. This year, because of the pandemic, we're not scheduled to receive a census data until July 31st. It may be earlier, but that's the scheduled time for the census data to arrive. Therefore, this year, we have a dispensation of going to December 15th for the final map adoption.
Andy Pickett, my last question for you. Butte County has lost people as a result of the various fires in recent years. I wonder if the county has already started calculating the amount of money that could be lost from federal and state funding?
That's a complicated question. We always try to forecast our financial situation. So to some degree, yes. However, the population is one indicator of a number of things that determine funding. So yes, we try to forecast, but not specifically down to the number of people that have left the county.
That was Andy Pickett, Butte County Chief Administrative Officer. Continuing at the Board of Supervisors meeting on Monday, Supervisor Deborah Lucero requested that a discussion of the flooding problem in North Chico be agendized. She referred back to the flooding in 2019 and noted that the flooding event triggered a hydrology study of the North Chico area, a Department of Water Resources study, a FEMA floodplain study, and a Caltrans study. But none of those studies have been finalized and brought to the county to be incorporated into a county solution. Lucero also requested updates at the next meeting from various county departments as they relate to the North Chico flooding. Next, Supervisor Todd Kimmelshue requested to bring back an item from the previous meeting as he wants to change his vote. At the January 12th board meeting, Kimmelshue voted with Supervisors Lucero and Tammy Ritter against the resolution called Healthy Communities Approach to COVID-19 Local Restrictions. The resolution calls on counties to ignore state health guidelines regarding the coronavirus and encourages schools to open for in-person classes as quickly as possible. Kimmelshue stated that after the vote, he talked with county supervisors in 5 other counties, and they decided they needed to, quote, stick together in rural counties. However, Supervisor Tammy Ritter, who represented the board at the conference where the resolution originated, stated that after the meeting, Kimmelshue contacted her to explain why he was changing his vote.
I was surprised with Kimmelshue's vote with Supervisor Lucero and myself, and then received a call early the next morning after the meeting where he told me he had been contacted by Gallagher and that he was going to be changing his vote and bringing it back to the board.
Supervisor Kimmelshue also requested that a discussion of a needle distribution ban be placed on the agenda, even though there is no such program in the county, and it is questionable whether a ban on a state-authorized program would even hold up. The county's own behavioral health department, as well as the state public health department, supports these types of programs. The next meeting of the Board of Supervisors is scheduled for February 9th at 9 a.m. You can view these meetings online. Turning to the Chico Bidwell Parks and Playground Commission, At its regular monthly meeting on Monday, the Commission reviewed and accepted public comments to its programmatic environmental impact report, which is required for the proposed vegetative fuels management plan. According to the city's website, the purpose of the plan is to protect lives and property and enhance natural resources in the city. The plan covers all land owned and managed by the city, including parks, greenways, and open space. The plan identifies high fire hazard areas in greatest need of treatment, describes how fire can best be managed in each of Chico's 5 main vegetation communities, and develops policies and actions focused on reducing the harmful impact of wildfire in the community. All of this while also protecting and in many cases enhancing Chico's natural resources, including by redressing the adverse effects of long-term fire suppression. In the process of creating and adopting this plan, an environmental impact report must be conducted, and part of that process is gathering public input. The public input period is happening right now, and one group that is concerned about the plan is Friends of Bidwell Park, a nonprofit organization formed back in 2003 and focuses on the preservation and protection of the natural resources of Bidwell Park. I spoke with board member Tom Barrett about his organization's concern with the plan and started by asking him to explain the areas of concern.
Our concerns with the plan was, first of all, we've been asking for it, and when I was in the Park Commission, we asked for a vegetation management plan for the park. The park has been woefully neglected over the years, and the vegetation has gotten out of hand. Well, Paradise Fire came along, and it really got people excited about fires that could happen. So the city went after a grant with the Resources Conservation District of Butte County with Cal Fire to get a plan to deal with fuel management in the park. The plan in the EIR identifies the whole park as being a hazardous zone for fires that could cause destruction like you saw in Paradise. It also identifies all the other open spaces in Chico that are owned by the city as potential fire hazards in those areas too. So the plan covers not just Bidwell Park, it covers all the open space in Chico, Little Channel, up by the airport, and a lot of little parks, Comanche Creek, Little Chico Creek, all the open spaces that the city owns. It's a fire management, fuel management plan for them. So it's not just Bidwell Park. It covers a lot. I mean, it covers all the open space in Chico. But the plan was developed and introduced last fall, and it was provided, given a couple meetings to discuss the plan, and different drafts were brought up. The problem with the city's process when they bring these things up for discussion is they limit comments in the process to 3 minutes. This is something the city council established years ago for meetings to keep meetings under control. But here we have a plan that's very detailed, a lot of depth, many, many pages, a couple hundred pages, and you get 3 minutes to comment, and that's it. The same thing with the EIR. At the meeting the other night, they told commenters you have 3 minutes. The EIR is a huge document, and they give you 3 minutes to say anything. You can't even voice that. And they don't make accommodations for you to increase your discussion. So the process, to me, really has a lot of issues. The document's so detailed that very few people are going to read it and actually comment on it. It's one of those really detailed things. So we don't get enough review by local folks, by interested parties. And if you watched or listened to the meeting, very few, maybe one or two commissioners actually read any of the documents. None of the commissioners had any comments on it. Most of the comments were, that's a great document. That's a really good document. Only a couple park commissioners actually read any of it and had any comments. So the process to me is kind of needs some kind of tweaking to get real community input on these kind of documents.
Tom Barrett of Friends of Bidwell Park, you are a biologist, a botanist. You were on the commission years ago. Talk about some of the concerns that you have with the plan itself.
My biggest concern, and the city started doing this a few years ago, to kind of address homeless people camping in the park, they decided to start raising sight lines of vegetation in the park. And this was something that the police chief asked the city to do. And without consulting with the park commission, the city started raising sight lines in the park, which means they cut all the plants from the ground up to about 6 or 7 feet in elevation. They call it elevating the tree. Well, this plan calls for elevating throughout the park. In other words, they're going to trim the park up so you can look across the park from Vallombrosa to South Park Drive and be able to see South Park Drive from Vallombrosa. All of the trees, all the plants are going to be raised. The vegetation, what they call sight line, is going to be raised. It's not a natural park then. It's a manicured park. The biggest issue they have, like, especially in the Loop Park, is all the invasive and exotic plants that the city has allowed to take over because there's been no management of it. If they get rid of those things, it's not a problem. Because then you get raised sight lines, but they're going after like some of the native plants. And they're going to raise sight lines of native plants. And to me, it's a completely, that's going to ruin the park. And we didn't, this is not Central Park. This is supposed to be, and he said, we're supposed to leave it in a natural condition. The other thing I don't have that's interesting and new to this whole process is in park vegetation management is introducing controlled burns to take care of vegetation. I think it's a good idea. We tried it in the park.
Tom Barrett, you've talked about what you have concerns about that's included in the plan. What is missing in the plan? What is this plan not addressing that you see as a problem?
Basically, what I call specific objectives for different parts of the plan. They're kind of an amorphous thing. There's no specific objectives. Consultants have said, oh, we have this huge fire problem in Bidwell Park, potential fire problem, but the risk is not evaluated. Fire chief came out and said, well, the risk in Lower Park is very low because of topography, because of the vegetation, because of this and that. It contradicts what the consultant said, that, oh, it's a severe fire problem. We could turn it into paradise if a fire got started in Lower Bidwell Park. So this thing about risk assessment is really not existent in the plan. I mean, if it's a problem, then we need to deal with it. But if it's not so much of a problem, I don't think we need to take drastic steps to deal with an issue that's not really an issue. And that's, to me, that's missing, a missing piece of this plan and EIR is the risk assessment.
Tom Barrett of Friends of Bidwell Park, I know it's a very long and detailed document, and I know that you are combing through it and you have many, many, many recommendations to the Parks Department. Give us your top recommendation to address the park's needs.
My top recommendation, especially for Lower Park, is not to raise sight lines. I mean, to leave native plants, native plants. Some of the recommendations are to trim up the native plants. If you ever see a California bay tree, they're what we call a polymorphous plant. They have different shapes. They're either a tree, they're a shrub, or they're a bush. They may have one stem, they may have multiple stems. But the plan calls for cutting off all the stems except one. So there's one trunk, okay? That way, it won't become a fire ladder that may get into the higher up into the trees. Well, there's a lot of shrubs in the park that are multi-stemmed shrubs that this could be applied to, and it actually makes no sense. It's, to me, it's not an issue, but it's a component of the plan that I think is really, I say, a waste of time. It also completely takes away from the natural element of the plan. It's also going to bother wildlife. I mean, the wildlife lives in those shrubs and those plants. It's their home.
That was Tom Barrett with Friends of Bidwell Park. The public comment period for the Environmental Impact Report ends on February 2nd. You are listening to the Butte Report on KZFR 90.1 FM, broadcasting from downtown Chico. Also during the Parks Commission meeting, the situation around the Chico Police dismantling homeless encampments in Lower Bidwell Park was discussed. Commissioner Lee Smith-Peters stated her objection to the movement of people out of the parks and called on the police to stop this action. Public Works Director Eric Gustafson told commissioners that the movement was the decision of the City Council and the police. Smith-Peters reminded the commission of the letter sent to the council last July calling on the city to find an appropriate campground for unsheltered people living in Lower Bidwell Park. In response to how to balance the protection of park resources with the protection of the unsheltered population, Parks Commissioner Anna Moore said,
"Forcing people out of the park is not going to work. They will move further into the park and they will move into neighborhoods. For a solution to be found to this problem, we need shelter for the homeless. It's a crisis. We've needed it immediately for years. And it's really appalling that this hasn't happened yet.
Because of the continuing cold and rainy weather, the Chico Emergency Warming Centers have been activated all week and will continue through Friday morning. The Warming Center is located at Depot Park on 5th and Cedar Streets in Chico and open from 5 p.m. through 8 a.m. The Warming Center is a tent structure with lighting and heating for those seeking respite from the cold. Personal belongings must be left outside of the tent area and pets must remain leashed at all times. Currently, sleeping in the warming tent is not allowed. Next week, the Gridley City Council meets on February 1st, starting at 6 p.m. On Tuesday, February 2nd, the Oroville City Council and the Chico City Council meet, starting at 4:30 p.m. and 6 p.m., respectively. And the Butte County Water Commission and the Gridley School Board meet on February 3rd. Looking even further, on Wednesday, February 10th at 6 p.m., the City of Chico will host a community meeting via Zoom conference call. According to the city's website, the city asks residents to share their opinion about housing in Chico. Input gathered from this meeting will be included in the update on the city's housing element, which is a community plan for all types of housing for the next 8 years. According to the city, this is your chance to tell the city your thoughts about housing. The Butte Report is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Members First Credit Union, created by the community for the community. Members First is a member-owned, not-for-profit financial institution providing checking, savings, loans, and credit cards to residents of Butte, Glen, Shasta, and Tehama counties. For more information, visit m1cu.org. Music by bensounds.com. Stay tuned for the Chico News and Review on the radio with Jason Cassidy. Jason will cover the vest shooting verdict by the district attorney and responses by CC4J, Chico Citizens for Justice, and other citizen groups, plus a segment on the encampments in Chico and a tour of art galleries online. Remember that the most important aspect of democracy is an informed citizenry. Tune in again next week and stay informed about what your government is doing.